1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great Saturday. We got some beautiful weather this weekend, thank goodness. Considering we could have been looking down the barrel of tropical storm depression or whatever, Iota, I think it was. I don't know. I can't even keep track anymore. There's too many of them at this point. But thankfully, we're not doing that. We are looking down the barrel, however, of some FSU football here at 4:30. So we have a short show this week. But we're going to have a good time with it. We're going to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Just had its 2020 inductions. Yeah, you can still catch that on HBO and HBO Max if you didn't get a chance to see it. Interesting inductions this year. But we're going to talk about maybe what the future can or should hold for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with somebody else who I originally met as a music journalist. We've spent a long time together covering music. Phil Bailey is joining us. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola, Phil.
Howdy.
Hey, so I don't know if you got to, before we get into the in depth, did you get to watch the induction thing this year? Because it's weird, you can't call it an induction ceremony, really. They didn't get to have like the big event that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has become known for, where they do this live big party and everybody comes and everybody gets on stage and plays and you have the big jam session and all of that. Because of COVID, they didn't do that, so they had kind of an alternate induction event. And I don't know if you got to see it. If you did, I'm wondering what you thought of it.
No, I didn't catch any of it.
So for those who haven't seen it, or if you're going to go check it out on HBO Max, what they kind of did instead was kind of have like a mini documentary film on each artist, which is kind of cool. And they kind of do something like that in the regular inductions. But this was a little different. They put a little bit more effort into it, a little more of a production into it. And they'd start out with whoever would have been the person there on stage to, you know, read out the big induction into the Hall of Fame. And it was different depending on who the artist was. Depeche Mode had Charlize Theron. Nine Inch Nails had Iggy Pop. They each had somebody of some standing. And then they basically did like a mini documentary film about that artist, and then ended with, you know, speeches from those artists, you know, socially distanced from each other in their own homes, like a weird kind of Zoom call if it was a band, or, you know, sometimes they do one person at a time, but like Depeche Mode did theirs all at once. So all the three current members of Depeche Mode were on a split screen and talking to each other and over each other. It's kind of weird, but I guess it was the best they could do. But in with that, they have now decided to permanently change the schedule for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So ordinarily, we would have had the induction ceremony already by now. They're going to permanently move that back to late fall. And they're going to permanently move the next class of nominations back to early in the year rather than late in the previous year. So normally we'd be getting nominations around this time. We won't actually get nominations for the next class, the 2021 class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, until early in 2021. So, I'm really used to being at this time of year talking about, you know, the latest nominations that have come out and who might make it forward from that, et cetera. We won't be able to have that conversation for a while, but there's a lot of conversation that we can have in that there are a lot of artists that are way, way, way overdue for their time in the sunshine with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I want to start out talking about, I've asked Phil and I have also to pick out an artist or two to discuss in a little bit more depth as being overdue for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And this first segment, we're going to talk about artists that have already been nominated, but just haven't made it in. So Phil, who did you want to talk about first as an artist that has been nominated before and should already be in?
The artist I'm picking is the Eurythmics.
Okay, good
and
choice.
I think they're one of my favorite bands, but they are also, I think, a great symbol of one of the problems with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is it is so weighted toward the 60s and 70s from its inception, with kind of a disdain toward anything from the 80s, particularly anything from the 80s that had a synthesizer in it. They, now, you know, prog rock synthesizers all day long, but if it's kind of on the poppy new wave side, there's been a real disdain toward those acts. And now it's been so long that, you know, 90s acts, 2000 acts are getting into the hall. And I feel like there's almost a generation of music that's just gotten forgotten by the nominating committee.
I think that's definitely true. Now, Eurythmics, of course, have been nominated at least once, so they haven't been totally forgotten. I do think we're starting to see some movement on that, and you know, of course, a great example being this year Depeche Mode being inducted. It's hard to think of a more synthesizer-driven act that came up in the 80s than Depeche Mode, although they certainly exist. But yeah, you know, I think some of that has been the overbearing influence of former Rolling Stone publisher, I think former at this point, I believe he's retired from Rolling Stone, Jan Wenner, who was also the CEO, for lack of a better term, of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he's had this outsized influence. And he, you know, it's kind of like the whole, I'm going to put this in Batman terms for you. You either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And I think that's Jan Wenner in a nutshell. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, really helped to pioneer rock journalism and founded a very important magazine. And in the 60s and 70s, Rolling Stone was untouchable. But like when he started to become, you know, a multimillionaire from running Rolling Stone, he really turned into a businessman.
Well, and I don't even know that necessarily just because Jan Wenner got rich, but I think it speaks highly to the boomer Gen X divide, where, of course, Gen X, things that are created in that time really has never gotten its due because the boomers, lack of a better word, were in charge for so long in such numbers. And then the millennials come up, and again, Gen X just is left kind of wanting.
And I think we've seen, again, some shift on that. And somebody that's been credited with a lot of that within the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is Questlove, who has become one of the voters and has become kind of a big lobbyer in that regard. And that, you know, he was credited very, very much for finally getting Daryl Hall and John Oates in. That was an act that he really pushed that had been overlooked for years and years.
And Questlove is not necessarily professionally, but is a great music historian, if not just a musician.
Yeah.
Sometimes musicians get very myopic.
That's true. Well, and speaking of music history, the act that I want to mention that's been nominated, I believe, 5 times at this point and still is not in, it was very much an influence on all of that electronic music of the 80s, although they came up earlier. And I would say was probably an influence on the Eurythmics, and that's Kraftwerk. Just, you know, brilliant electronic music innovators that really set the mold, not just for electronic music, but for a lot of hip hop, too. There is a ton of, you know, if you go back to like the early Afrika Bambaataa, Planet Rock type stuff, man, Kraftwerk is all over that stuff, you know. And it's just,
well, another act that needs some kind of recognition with the hall is Afrika Bambaataa.
Yeah, and
you
has
can't listen to a hip-hop album from the 80s without somebody giving Afrika Bambaataa a shout out.
Yeah, and he has been nominated before as well and is not in. There are, of course, tons of artists. I think, you know, I had asked Phil and I each were going to pick 2. My other one was the Smiths, which we won't get into a whole lot of detail on because we're running low on the segment. Who was your second act for this this segment, Phil?
Well, shockingly, it's a band that's never been nominated and doesn't even show up on the stub list, but it's Sha Na Na.
Huh.
Because without Sha Na Na, I don't think there is a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't think anybody cares because they basically created rock and roll nostalgia.
That's fair.
And not necessarily based on their music, but based on their importance. I think they need some sort of a, maybe not Hall of Fame membership, but like the, you know, some sort of recognition.
Yeah, there is an influence / non-performer category that it would make some sense for them to be in, if not as artists. I agree with that. Well, listen, we do have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about acts that haven't even been nominated before that are overdue for their place in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We have Phil Bailey on the line with us this morning, and we are talking about some of the bands that have been overlooked to date for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the one I just played for you there coming in from the break is definitely one of those. Never nominated, somehow insanely never nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, much less inducted. The Go-Go's, which I know, Phil, is one of your favorite bands and is one of mine as well. I just, you know, how do you overlook the Go-Go's? This is the band, still the only all-female band to ever have a number one album on the Billboard Hot 100, or Billboard 200, excuse me. I mean, you know, that was when that happened in the 80s, it was, you know, a huge achievement, and yet still not recognized. And a band that, you know, continues to endure, continues to performed together, and just had a great documentary released on Showtime. If you haven't seen that yet, I definitely highly recommend that. What's going on here, Phil?
Well, there's been a lot of ink spilled over the years about how rock and roll is a boys' club, and I think that may very well be showing its head with the exclusion of a band like the Go-Go's, who are not only important but successful and still relevant now. I mean, you say 80s girl band, Go-Go's. I mean, it's just words that you're not going anywhere else. Even Bengals fans are going to say, well, it's the Go-Go's.
I'm with you there. And the Bengals is an act that I wouldn't mind seeing inducted at some point, too, although I think there are definitely others ahead of them. I'm a big fan of that band
and
as
also,
well.
And also, there were an all-female band that form themselves.
Right.
There's no producer, there's no label, there's no
body
behind the scene.
Yeah.
They just form themselves.
Well, you know, one of the things, of course, I've had this conversation going on Facebook all week amongst friends. And, you know, one of the things that I said is, and there has been a concerted effort in the past few years to try to get more female artists into the hall. And, you know, there seems to have been at least one every year for the past few years. And, you know, some really great overdue choices like Joan Jett, some that are a little more dubious like Stevie Nicks as a solo act. Stevie Nicks with Fleetwood Mac, I got no argument against, but Stevie Nicks as a solo act, yeah, okay, that's fine.
No.
You know, but, you know, there are definitely...
Well, and Stevie Nicks as a solo act was just second-tier Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't like her solo stuff was something new and different.
You know, I had one of the things I had said on Facebook that I'll just repeat because not everybody here is my Facebook friend. You know, I would be all for them taking a year and just inducting all female or, you know, female driven acts as like kind of a catch up year. And, you know, we mentioned Eurythmics in the first segment. Kate Bush is somebody that's been nominated before that's not in. The B-52s, I think, would be a great choice. Never been even nominated. Susie and the Banshees, never been nominated. The Runaways. You know, never nominated. Joan Jett's in as a solo, or well, as a member of the Blackhearts, but you know, the Runaways were, you know, yeah, they were kind of put together by a guy, but they were really the first all girl band that got a lot of notice. And you're talking about a band that was Joan Jett, it was Sherry Curry, it was Lita Ford, it was Michael Steele, who eventually went on to be in the Bengals. So, you know, these are all women with huge careers, and you know, that wasn't a band that I really intended to spend a lot of time on, but that's just a huge oversight for them not to be. And there's so many great female acts that just haven't gotten their due as far as it's concerned. So, yeah, I would be all for them taking a year and saying, you know what, we're not even making guys eligible this year. Just, you know, any band that, you know, or it could be, you know, I mean, the B-52s, yes, there are guys in the B-52s, but it's really, you know, it's really centered around Kate and Cindy's voices more than anything else. Yeah.
So. Well, I think Fred Schneider might have a little disagreement on that.
Well, but you know, that's fine. And yeah, I, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, you can't have the B-52s without Fred. I definitely agree with that. But it is a band where females were in the forefront. You know,
And you had a version of the B-52s without Cindy, without Kate. So
true.
What was it? Seven? Anyway, they've been a five piece. They've been a trio. Fred's the constant.
Yeah, I mean, but that's not exactly the prime era of the B-52s either. You know, the trio era of the B-52s is not, you know, and it was relatively short, all things considered, you know, because Kate did come back, so.
Oh, yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah. So Phil, I'll leave it over to you now. Who is another act that's never been nominated that you're like, where are they? What's going on?
I kind of know why they haven't been nominated, but the Carpenters.
Okay, great choice.
Yeah, they're not rock and roll. They're, God, you know, the 70s, they were anti-rock and roll. They were AM. They're just everything rock wasn't about. Except in the last 40 years, every rock band in the world has covered at least one Carpenters song.
No, they're hugely influential. Hugely. I mean, you can't really even...
You know, Karen Carpenter is, you know, rightly now gets named as one of the top drummers of all time. Yeah, they did a lot of soft rock stuff, but they weren't the Councils. I mean, they had some serious chops behind them.
No, great, great musicians, great vocal harmonies, which that have been hugely influential on thousands of acts. And yeah, Karen Carpenter is an amazing, or was, I should say, an amazing drummer, you know, and something that she has finally started to be recognized on. But, you know, yeah, if you'd said that in, you know, 75, people would have sneered at you. But I think at this point, you know, overdue a nomination at the very least. I mean, yeah, I could think of, you know, it's hard to think of somebody that's more influential. It's a great choice and somebody that's never been nominated. I'm going to go ahead and move over to another act that I think is long overdue. And I think most people who have paid attention to music since about 82 or so would have to agree with this pick, even if they might turn their nose up at it a little bit, because there's some people that were kind of snobby about this band in their heyday. But Duran Duran, I mean, you know, still a band that is together and fresh and vibrant and puts on amazing live shows, first of all. But aside from that, just inescapable music that really, you know, set the tone for the whole decade in a way. And then some, you know, they continue to have hits on into the 90s. But just another hugely influential act. You can't tell me that you don't hear Duran Duran in bands like The Killers or Churches, or, you know, there's any number. There's been like a whole like new wave synth revival over the past 10 years of, you know, new up and coming acts that were heavily influenced by those bands of the 80s. But Duran Duran is kind of emblematic of that. And, you know, we've seen some of those acts start to get in that were maybe the ones that were a little bit more taken seriously, like The Cure and Depeche Mode. But Duran Duran deserved to be taken just as seriously.
Well, when people say 80s music, I love 80s music. Generally what they're really talking about is MTV music, you know, predominantly in MTV from like 82 to 85.
Right.
And there was no band bigger in that time frame than Duran Duran.
Well, absolutely. You know, it was, you know, every new video was a big deal. You know, they were, you know, one of the top acts at Live Aid, one of the last few acts to play at Live Aid because they were that big at the time. In fact, that was ended up being the last show of the original lineup before they reunited a couple of decades later. You know, the Reflex, the Wild Boys, View to a Kill, Rio, Hungry Like the Wolf. I could sit here and name, you know, two dozen songs that everybody listening right now knows, no matter how old they are, no matter, you know.
And everyone knows the videos. Everyone knows the look, the style, the feel of the band that, yes, some, you know, older rock purists would have sneered at, but it's arguable their look. It was inspiring David Bowie on Let's Dance and Jazzin' for Blue Jean.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, they set a style for, you know, half a decade, musically, fashion-wise, just, and then kind of created that modern rock star that isn't just, you know, chord progression. That, you know, they have a look, they have videos. The kind of a whole package. What would they have been if they'd had social media?
Oh gosh. Well, you know, and it was that thing where, you know, they were also blessed with being pretty. So, you know, at the time they got dismissed by a lot of people as teen idols and that kind of thing. But I mean,
Jim Morrison.
Well, the Beatles. I mean, the go back and look at, you know, Beatlemania. They were teen idols, and it was, oh, the kids love this Beatles band. You know, the Beatles didn't go away, and Duran Duran has not gone away. You know, that you know, I mean, they continue to work. I mean, if they put out new records, they continue to work with the biggest name producers in the world, because those producers were influenced by Duran Duran and they want to work with them. They worked with Timbaland. They worked with Mark Ronson. You know, these huge names that, you know, are responsible for some of the biggest hits on today's radio. They want to work with Duran Duran because they grew up loving Duran Duran. Yeah, that alone says a lot. You know, I want to mention too, Phil, you know, you talked about like the MTV era, and that era is, you know, hugely influential on Gen X, and I think also deserves to be recognized in the Hall of Fame's non-performer category. You know, somebody like Rob Pittman, who was really at the helm of MTV at the beginning, or the five original MTV VJs, maybe some of the early video directors that kind of helped make music video a thing in the 80s. I think they maybe overdue for some recognition by the Hall of Fame as well in the non-performer categories.
Oh, way, way overdue. But who's even? We'll just spin off that. They're overdue because, for whatever reason, the Hall of Fame doesn't seem to really appreciate the contribution of journalists and disc jockeys in creating and building and promoting the acts. I mean, without disc jockeys, nobody knows who any of these bands are.
Yeah, let me just mention one thing to close, and that's that Casey Kasem, of all people, is not in the Rock and Roll
Hall of Fame. That's where I was headed. America's Top 40 is not in the Hall of Fame.
That in and of itself is crazy. Well, unfortunately, we are, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, up against FSU football, so we do have a short show today. We've got to run, but we'll be back next week with much more. Phil, thanks so much for joining me today. Until next week, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.